and welcome back. I'm really looking forward to tonight's program. I hope you come away with it with a sense of having met someone that perhaps you haven't heard before in this light, someone who has led a most unusual life, a man who has literally devoted 47 years, I think, of his life trying to roll back the mysteries of the occult, of the secret societies, of the Illuminati, of the globalists, of those arcane groups of killers who have been running things for centuries, centuries upon centuries. The imagery you see around you, the symbolism is everywhere. Without the work of this man, many of us would never understand what we are literally seeing almost every day of our lives in terms of symbols of evil, symbols of control, symbols of globalism and domination and subjugation and subversion of the free will of men and women, of the rollback and destruction, the deconstruction, the demolition of our Constitution and our Bill of Rights. This man has done more to contribute to the understanding of the reality, not the conspiracy. The conspiracy is real, but the reality of the world in which we live, in which we suffer, and in all too many cases in which we die prematurely. He is a brilliant man. He is a scholar without equal in his field. His work has literally spawned the careers of many of the so-called leading lights of information, of research, of revelation in terms of how the world is run today. I will not name any names, but the work of this man has been borrowed, it has been stolen, it has been plagiarized, it has been perverted and corrupted and used to literally feather the nests of many people who haven't the common courtesy of even mentioning this man's name. He is a man that many of you, I think over a million now, have seen the film Zeitgeist on the internet, maybe 2 million. It's way, way up there. It's obviously a runaway, a huge sensation blockbuster online. And the man's voice you hear in the beginning, the man who speaks so matter-of-factly but so brilliantly, intensely about things that are going on all around us, is Jordan Maxwell. And Jordan Maxwell, I'm proud to say, has been a friend of mine for many, many years. He doesn't do radio very often and hasn't been on this program in a long time. But many years ago, Jordan was on often, and we had some incredible conversations, which will appear in my archives in time. I'm working my way backwards, and my aim is to establish a literal 14-year library of programs online for all of you subscribers to listen to. And what it will paint is nothing less than the end of America as we knew it. And I think it'll be an amazing archive when it's finished. But many of those programs early on were with Jordan Maxwell. Jordan really maintains a low profile and low posture today for a variety of reasons. He has been, as have many people doing good on the planet, threatened. He has been intimidated, like all of us. He is trying to make his way. And while contributing, nonetheless, to the continuing betterment of humankind, that part of humankind which is still able to better itself, which unfortunately seems to be diminishing all the while we talk. But anyway, with that said, let me bring on my friend Jordan Maxwell. And what we're going to do tonight is kind of walk through a little tour of the amazing life of Jordan Maxwell. Hello, my friend, and welcome back.
Hello there, Jeff. As really feels strange being back on the radio again, because I haven't done radio in about 7 years. And the only reason I'm doing this show is because of my high regard for your person and your work and your program. because you were right, I haven't done any radio or any public lectures or anything since 2001. I just gave up. I just threw my hands up after 47 years of talking about it. And when it finally, came on the scene in your face, I just was so depressed, and that I just gave up. I just decided not to try and talk anymore. It's what I was warning and talking about all these years. It's finally happened, and I don't know what else to say about it.
Jordan, you know, the ironic part of it is, and it truly is irony, is that you, and there's only one other man I would mention in the same paragraph with you, and that is the former British Secret Service professional for over 35 years, who is an American constitutional scholar.
His name is
Dr. John Coleman.
Whose
work has also been ruthlessly stolen by so many people and used without attribution. Between the two of you, I hold none in higher esteem or higher regard. And,
well, I appreciate that. I thank you for it.
Now, what the irony of it is, my friend, and we've talked about this, is that you, above all Americans, with the inclusion of Dr. John Coleman, are, in my estimation, you are as high a level, spiritually, morally, politically, intellectually, a patriot as there is. There are none higher. And what you are is a hero. What you are is a man who have tried his very best to wake up this fading nation, to shake it out of its lethargy, and to urge it to take back its birthright, that which the founding fathers gave us all. But what has happened to Jordan Maxwell, the patriot, the hero, the bizarre irony, the turnaround, the inside out, the black is white, the up is down ethic of these lunatics? Who are you today, Jordan? Are you a hero?
No, no. As a matter of fact, I live in one room, actually a two-room office, with my brother, who is very sick, and he lives in one room, and I live in the other in Los Angeles. I have no bank accounts. I have no money, no bank accounts, no credit cards, no checking account.
And how are you held by the government and the institutions of this oppressive, evil cartel, cabal, occult group who have subverted the United States, who have taken over the United States? How are you held? What is your position today? You are the enemy. You're not the hero.
That's right.
Everything is ass backwards.
Yeah, you know, that's exactly why I haven't said or done anything since 2001. My phones are tapped. I am threatened. I was on a major radio. I did only maybe two radio shows in the past 7 years. And I was on a major radio talk show. And toward the end of the interview, about 20 minutes before the end of it, I happened by chance to bring up a subject which I don't normally talk about, and immediately my phone was disconnected at the telephone company. The telephone company disconnected my phone.
Yeah.
You know, while I'm on the air in a national radio talk show. And the moment it went off, I thought maybe it was something wrong with my phone. So I continued to listen, and immediately, maybe 3 or 4 seconds after it went off, my phone came back on again, and I could hear people walking around in an office talking. And it was obviously a very small office, because you could hear the reverberations of their feet walking around. You could hear them walking and talking to each other. And somebody said, one of the guys said to somebody else, somebody's going to have to deal with this guy. And then somebody mentioned something about the phone, and then they walked over, and you heard, and I heard them walking over to the phone, and then they hung it up. So obviously NSA or CIA or somebody has got a direct connection to AT&T and will cut off my phone from the telephone company anytime I talk about things which are too explosive to be given to the American people.
And I might add that there are many things that Jordan Maxwell knows about, which he will not speak to virtually anyone about for that very reason.
Yeah, you've got that right. There are many things I could tell you I'm not about to tell you. I'm too old and tired to be arrested at 3 o'clock in the morning and taken to some warehouse and with a billy club and beaten to the, or fingers cut off and all of that stuff that's going on now in America. Not me. I give up. As far as I'm concerned, I was the one back in 1960, 61 and 62, while when Kennedy was still alive. I was giving lectures in downtown L.A., at little bookstores and little mom-and-pop stores on secret societies, the Illuminati, Bible codes, Knights Templars, international banking cartels, and all of that kind of stuff. And I thought I was doing something to awaken my fellow man and my country, only to discover that today I am now the enemy.
Right.
Now I'm the one that is, the hunted. The hunter becomes the hunted.
Well, I'm probably in the same train with you going to some destination.
Yeah, me too. I think you're right.
What we're going to do tonight is not talk about secret societies and the occult things that go on in the Illuminati. What we're going to talk about are some of the experiences in Jordan Maxwell's life which are, I guess we could say, paranormal. We could also say bizarre. We could also say incredible. And you're going to hear some things tonight that are just, certainly they're entertaining, but beyond that they're going to provoke some pretty interesting reactions in your mind. So stay tuned, and we'll be back with the man whom you hear in Zeitgeist all over the place, Mr. Jordan Maxwell. Jordan, as a little boy, what was it like for you? Where did you grow up? Was it Florida? Do I remember?
Yeah, it was Florida.
That's right, I remember. Florida. Okay.
Yeah,
it's been over 10, 12 years since we talked about this.
I know. I was born in a town called Pensacola, Florida.
Sure.
Which is I was about a mile and a half from Gulf Breeze, which is a famous UFO. So I grew up with all kinds of other world experiences from as far back as I can remember as a child. For instance, I pulled my bed in my bedroom. I pulled my bed up to the window so at night I could look at the stars and talk to God. And I used to wake up in the middle of the night and I would see someone at my window because it's very warm in Florida, and so I'd have the windows all open, of course, with the screen, and I would wake up and I would see someone just for a fleeting moment. I would see someone was there, and when they woke up, they quickly moved.
But how old were you about, Jordan?
Maybe eight, okay. Maybe 7 or 8, 9 mm-hmm. years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I quickly hit the screen, opened the screen, and my dog was in the backyard. The moon was full. I remember this so clearly, many times happening. And the dog was sitting there, said nothing, and the yard was totally open, and there was nobody there. But I saw them. So I started having, for lack of a better term, other world experiences at a very early age, going out of my body. That was a whole off-the-wall experience, too, at 8 years old, 9 years old.
OBE?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And this was in a dream state, or were you conscious?
Well, what happened is, the middle of the night, I woke up, and I was about, 5 or 6 miles from home, standing on a concrete overpass, a bridge over some train tracks on the west side of town. And this was back in, 45, 46.
Now, these are dreams, Jordan, or did you actually find yourself standing there?
Yeah, well, I was actually standing there because I was freezing cold. I was in my night clothes, and I was freezing.
Huh.
And I stood between the pylons of the bridge to protect me from the wind chill.
Huh.
And I was freezing and shuddering, and middle of the night, I would say probably like 1 or 2 in the morning. Mm-hmm. And I kept wondering, why am I out here on this bridge? And I saw a car, I heard a car, because at that time the city was very, very small. Mm-hmm. And I heard a car speeding on the street that the bridge was on, and I looked out past the bridge pylon to see the car, and it was running red lights. Well, there's nobody around in that small town at 2 in the morning, but nonetheless, they're running red lights.
Mm-hmm.
And they started up the street. They started up the hill coming onto the, you know, onto the bridge I'm on,
mm-hmm.
and I'm freezing, and I'm watching them. And as they passed me, I saw the two girls in the back seat saw me and waved at me.
Teenagers.
Teenagers. And I knew all four of them. The boys in the front seat were you know, they saw me, and I just thought the whole thing was so strange that they shot past me speeding. And as they went down on the other side, I stepped out so I could watch them, and they blew a tire toward the end of the down, you know, off the bridge, but I could see them. They blew a tire, lost control of the car, skidded around, and they went into the parking lot of a restaurant. And I watched them as they skidded across the parking lot, hitting cars because they totally lost control, and crashed into the front of the restaurant. And I was so frightened because I even. At 8 years old, I had the presence of mind to know that what I've just witnessed is a terrible incident. So I ran across the bridge to the other side, because that's where the restaurant was
and
on
you're,
the other
you're,
side.
You're barefoot at this
and
time.
And I'm barefooted, yeah. And I ran down the bridge, going down to see if I could help them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm freezing cold, and I'm screaming to myself. I remember yelling to myself, "Don't fall," because I was running in my night clothes, and I was yelling at myself, "Don't fall," because I know at the speed I'm going, I'm going to, you know, scrape myself bad. So, and then I ran across the parking lot, and only halfway across the parking lot did I realize that I was on gravel, and my feet, you know, of course, it was hurting. I was in bare feet on gravel, and I remember distinctly thinking instantly, well, it's halfway to the restaurant as opposed to halfway back to the sidewalk. You might as well go on and finish what you started. So I ran on into the restaurant and saw all of this incredible, you know, chaos and tragedy and bloodshed everywhere. And it was a horrible scene, as you can imagine, a car crashing into a restaurant.
Now, this was about what time of night?
About 2 o'clock in the morning.
Okay, and the restaurant was still open?
Yeah, it was like a little all-night cafe kind of thing.
I see. Okay, and, hold on right there, Jordan. That's
sure.
A perfect place to stop.
Not a
scene.
The way to stop, but, this, but
no,
the place to stop.
To a pause here.
Yeah.
All right, hold on. We'll come right back. As we take a survey stroll, so to speak, through the amazing life of Jordan Maxwell, I hope you'll click on Jordan's name at guests@rents.com and visit Jordan's website. There's a lot there, fascinating materials. And again, you'll hear Jordan basically starring in major portions of Zeitgeist, the film everyone is talking about online. All right, we'll be right back. Teenagers that Jordan knew. He was 7 or 8 at the time, but he's standing there and watching them, and they lost control and crashed terribly through a parking lot and right into a still open restaurant at 2 a.m. in the small town of Pensacola. A lot of carnage. You ran up there. What happened, Jordan?
Well, it was, I'm not going to go into the details of what happened there, but I woke up a few minutes later, mm-hmm. and I'm in bed, sweating profusely and crying, and I was very, very upset. My family came in, settled me down, and I told them what I had seen, what I had witnessed, and I told them about the boys. They knew the kids. They knew the boys and the girls. And so the next morning, we found that it was a story was going around that exactly what I said had happened, just the way I said it had. And my mother, I remember looking at me like she had no idea in the world what was going on. I mean, I didn't either, but she couldn't figure out how in the world I could have known all of that. And I don't, you know, at the time, I didn't understand what was going on either. But I had many, many experiences in my hometown. One night...
What happened to your friends, by the way? Everyone's...
Well, they were killed.
All of them?
Yeah, I guess so. I don't remember exactly all the details, but it was a pretty horrible mess.
Yeah, okay.
And you know, like I said, I was about 8 years old.
Right.
Just
pretty,
a blinding,
pretty horrifically traumatizing thing.
Yeah, for an 8 year old to see. Yeah. And then, not too long, another experience that was really violent, as far as I'm concerned, was I woke up one night, in the middle of the night, and I went totally ballistic. When I woke up, there was an entity in the room, and it was, I cannot tell you how evil the presence was to my spirit. Whatever it was that was in my room was so profoundly evil that my spirit picked up on it and woke up and knew that it was in the room. I jumped up in the middle of the bed and started screaming, and I went totally out of control. I was yelling and screaming, and of course, middle of the night, the windows opened, the whole neighborhood heard me, and I was out of control. And my family, my mom and dad, come running into the room and flipped on the lights. And I remember distinctly yelling at the top of my voice and screaming at my family not to come in the room. I said, don't come in this room. And my mother is now crying, and she's beside herself. She doesn't know what's going on. And every time they started to come fully into the room, I would scream and yell at them to stay out of the room. And my dad would yell at me, why? And I said, because he's here. He's in the room. He's standing over there. And I pointed at a particular area of the room, and I could feel this very evil energy circulating around the room. I watched, I could feel it moving to one corner, and then I felt it coming near the bed. And I kept screaming to my family, don't come in this room. He's in here.
You're trying to protect them, obviously.
I was trying to protect them.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever it was there. I mean, as an 8 year old, I'm not dreaming this stuff up in the middle of the night. I was totally ballistic. And finally, I kept screaming for it to go away, and I felt the energy go out the wall. It left and went out of the house. And when it left through the wall, I fell down on the bed and I screamed. I said, "He's gone! It's gone!" And so. You know, those are the kind of things I lived with as a little kid. And, of course, the longer it went on, the more severe these strange occurrences began to happen to me.
Do you have a sense that you were an abductee or just exposed to creatures of the darkness, the dark side?
I think it was probably I was just being exposed.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know why, but I was being exposed at a very early age to the really, totally dark side, a side of the occult world that most people don't even want to think about and don't even want to hear about.
Mm-hmm.
And strange things would happen to me, like, for instance, one night when I was a small child, my dog woke up at about 5 o'clock in the morning. I woke up, my dog was howling and barking and, of course, waking up the neighborhood. And my dad yelled, go quiet that dog. And I knew that there was something bad because the dog was going out of its mind. And so I ran out to the back porch, and I'm telling you, the dog had cornered between the my backyard fence and the and my dad's garage, it had cornered a Tyrannosaurus rex, a little small, about 2 foot high, or I would estimate about 2 foot high, full developed dinosaur.
Wait a minute. All right, hold on now. What were the what time of day exactly, or evening rather?
The sun is just coming up, if it was even up.
Okay.
It was just daylight, just starting to come up, I would say about 5 o'clock in the morning.
But you could see clearly.
Oh, no, no, I could see very clear. Yeah,
right.
I mean, it was the, and the dog was out of its mind, barking and barking, but it had cornered up in the, between the fence and the garage a lizard, but it wasn't a lizard. It was standing on two very heavily, very heavy hind legs, two small little arms, a large head and a very heavy tail, and it kept switching at the dog and biting at it and snapping at the dog. The dog is barking. And I, you know, even as a little kid, I knew what dinosaurs looked like. And I know what lizards look like. This is not a lizard.
Yep.
This is the Tyrannosaurus rex, period.
What color was it?
It was, I don't know, it was probably a dark grayish.
Grayish, yeah.
But my dad, I screamed at my dad and my mom, and they came out. And my dad immediately called the neighbor two doors down. Of course, he didn't have to call anybody. Everybody's awake now with the dog screaming. And my dad called the neighbor who was had a lot of guns, and he brought over a rifle and a pistol. My dad told him, bring some firearms over. We got something in the backyard. And so he came over, and by that time, some of the other neighbors are now in the driveway and coming around to the back. And, yeah, everyone's standing there watching. This dog has cornered an actual dinosaur.
How many witnesses do you think were there all together?
I would say probably 8 or 9.
Okay.
Eventually the police, too.
Now, we'll finish this story in a minute. And let me just toss in here, this is not the only time I've come across stories, and I think Jordan has heard others as well, of what we'd call miniature dinosaurs or Tyrannosaurus rex type dinosaurs that are small like this. They've been seen. This isn't the only time, but this is a fascinating, another fascinating story. Okay, we'll come right back and pick it up in just a couple of minutes with Jordan Maxwell. Jordan, you got 8 or 9 people there. It's Dawn. The dog is cornered in your backyard. I assume there's a fence there, a small miniature T-Rex.
That's right. What it was. And because, you know, as a kid, I was fascinated by dinosaurs, so I know the difference between a large lizard and a dinosaur. And I actually saw one in my backyard. My dog cornered it. And my neighbor, my dad called the neighbor who had a gun, and he shot the thing, and shot it and killed it. And, of course, by this time, the police were out there and because of the disturbance. And I remember all the adults standing around talking, and everybody was just amazed, talking to each other, saying, how in the world, what is this thing, and where did it come from? And the only thing that my dad and the other guys there talking could come up with is that Pensacola at that time still is today, a major seaport for the Caribbean and South America. We get a lot of huge ships coming in from South America, banana boats and all kinds of things. So Obviously, you know, when they're taking on cargo in Brazil and South America, bringing it up to the States, Pensacola is a major port for those kind of huge ships. And maybe this thing, you know, was picked up by, you know, by accident with a crop of some kind. So I don't know how I got here. All I know is it was here, and it was shot and killed in my backyard.
And what happened to it? Do we know?
I don't even remember. I was just you know, a little kid. All I remember is that stood out in my mind. And and yeah, it just
imagine if you had it frozen right now, Jordan.
If we could have actually captured it, because it looked too dangerous, and everybody was agreeing. Maybe the ideas would have been different today, but sure. Back then everyone was agreeable. Shoot this thing, kill it now, get it over with. If we could have captured this thing and actually filmed it, and you know, it would have been a tremendous find. So I am totally sure. There's no doubt in my mind, because of what I've actually, with my own eyes, witnessed and seen, that prehistoric animals still exist on the earth. Of that, there is no doubt in my mind. For myself, I actually, with my own eyes, saw 6 pterodactyls in Los Angeles. Back in 1980, 81, I went. It rained the night before, and I realized that the sky would be clear over Los Angeles, and it's a beautiful sight going up into the mountains, like up at Griffith Park Observatory out in the rain, because it's very, very impressive. So I went up there the next morning about 6 o'clock, and I couldn't get in until about 6:30 when the park opened, and I was the only one there at the moment. And I drove up to the Griffith Park Observatory, and I went out to the observation deck overlooking the city, and it was just absolutely mind-boggling beautiful. And way out to the east, and I mean way out, like back out to San Bernardino, over 100 miles, I would say. My eyes picked up a small, tiny dot. A cloud, and I don't know why my eye would have seen something that far away and picked up on it, but I did, and I saw this little black dot, and it was almost not perceptible, and then I watched it, because it seemed to be coming my way, and there were high, heavy, white clouds over Los Angeles, and you know, when you see a 747 or a large jetliner coming in, they almost look like they're barely moving. They're just barely moving as they're coming in.
Right.
But not this thing. This thing was flat out moving. It crossed over and right over Los Angeles, and the white, heavy white clouds behind, so I could distinctly see what I was looking at. And it was a huge pterodactyl. It was enormous in size, and it was moving at an extraordinary rate of speed. But I noticed it did not flap its wings. It had huge scalloped wings and a long, heavy body, long beak, and it was a pterodactyl. I mean, and as it crossed over, right over Los Angeles, it was going toward the Pacific. And out by Santa Monica, there was a huge cloud mass over the Pacific in Santa Monica. I saw 5 other pterodactyls come out of that cloud mass to greet this one coming to it. And they formed a kind of like a train, one after the other, coming out of the cloud mass in the Pacific. And as they came out, they were following each other in a long line. This one connected with them, and they flew around in circles over the Pacific, and so and then they started going back out over the Pacific, and I watched them as they flew back out over the Pacific until they were totally out of sight, and I was just shocked. I actually saw a pterodactyl fly over Los Angeles about 7 o'clock in the morning on a crystal clear morning, and 5 more over Santa Monica. And I thought to myself at the time, I'm never going to tell this story, because nobody's ever going to believe me, and I cannot afford to have you know, my reputation ruined by seeing things that that sound crazy. But I that's what I saw, and I'm just telling you what I saw.
Well, so you saw pterodactyl, pteranodons. They're there. They're, by the way, if you want to do any research on this, just do a Google search for pterodactyls, pteranodons, and write eyewitness in there and see what you come up with.
Oh,
there have
yes.
been there have been reports all over the world of these things still being around.
No doubt about
especially
it.
Especially in Australia, New Guinea, Tasmania, and around there. Sir, here's one. An American World War II veteran, Dwayne Hodgkinson, in 1944, he entered a jungle clearing not far from Finchhoven, New Guinea. He said a large creature flew into the air and circled the clearing where he was, giving a clean view of its features. The veteran was interviewed in 2005 and still maintained that he saw a pterodactyl. It's interesting to note that the man is a flight instructor with over 13,000 hours of flying experience.
Well,
so there you go.
Yeah, as I said, Steven Spielberg is a lot of things, but stupid is not one of them. When he makes movies like Jurassic Park, you've got to figure a man of that caliber makes movies about Jurassic Park. There's something to that idea.
I agree.
No doubt about it.
So do a Google search, friends. Pteranodon, pterosaur, P-T-E-R-O-S-A-U-R, pterosaur or pterodactyl, and just type in eyewitness. And see what you come up with. There's a lot there. You're not the only man who's seen these things, and I do believe they're still around. They've been seen in Puerto Rico. They were seen in France. So these are some of the stories I know. And I think they've been mistaken for thunderbirds on occasion as well, which are another large flying bird.
That's right.
Yeah. But, yes, they're they must have been amazing when they did move their wings to see this kind of a large animal making its way through the air.
Yeah, this one had caught the airstream and was not flapping its wings. It was sailing past.
Wow.
And I do mean quick. It was like four or five times the speed that I would see a 747 at that height moving. This thing was moving maybe two or three times that fast.
Wow.
And startling.
That's amazing. That's another amazing Maxwell story.
That's
just...
One of the most phenomenal things that I've had about six what I would call peak experiences in my life.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, major off the wall things that have happened to me.
We have just about a minute and a half left. You want to hold and let's tell people about the website for a minute, Jordan, if we can.
Yeah, the website is simply jordanmaxwell.com. Jordan like the river. And Maxwell liked the coffee, jordanmaxwell.com.
How many of... I see you have, of course, bio, resume, audio, video, research, events, contact, and store there. How many things do we have available in the audio, video portion of your website?
Well, I think we've got a lot of radio shows that I've done in the past, old shows, and some pictures... There's just so much there, but if you go to the, I guess it's called, what is it called on my website? The store.
Sure.
On the store, it's got all the videos and DVDs and books and materials that I have been fascinated with. I don't want to clutter my website with junk. There's only a few things which I consider to be very important in relation to books. And the books that I have are e-books that you can pull down immediately are extraordinary stuff. I've been interested in the world of the occult for so many years, and I've heard all the stories. I've met all the people. I've been on the speaking circuit for years, and I'm telling you, there's just a whole world of knowledge that most people have never been privileged to even know exist. That's what I want to do. I want to awaken the world to the rest of the story of who we are and where we've come from.
You made an interesting remark about Spielberg, who many people think certainly knows an awful lot more than he will ever admit to.
Oh, I agree with that.
About the E.T. issue, about what's really going on the planet.
Oh, yeah. And Lucas also.
Sure.
I got a picture of me with Lucas on my website.
Yeah, I saw that a long time ago. All right, hold on, and we'll come right back. Another story and more with Jordan Maxwell in just a few minutes. ¶¶